important not only to the fate of these men and their families, but also to the fate of basic things in this country, like the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the Constitution, the rule of law, and basic civil liberties, because as we know, what affects one individual certainly affects all. Often people say things have really changed after September the 11th because of C-36. The only thing that changed in Canada is that the repressive measures which are traditionally used against immigrants and refugees in this country can now apply to citizens. That's what changed in Canada after September the 11th of 2001, because the security certificate, the basis for a secret trial, is not in C-36. It's in the Immigrant and Refugee Protection Act. So right there, for many, many years in this country, we have assumed that if you are a terrorist, you are covered under the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, which means, basically, that Canadians are not capable of being terrorists. And when we talk about what terrorism really is and who commits terrorism, I want to just remind people that Donald Rumsfeld, who some of you know at the head of the Pentagon in the United States, there was a New York Times article which came out last year which talked very approvingly of the way in which he handled the invasion of Iraq. And he said that he was required to sign off on any airstrike in which it was likely that more than 30 civilians would be killed. And Donald Rumsfeld signed off more than 50 of those airstrikes. So he assumed off the bat that 1,500 people, civilians, could die in those attacks. So this is the position of Donald Rumsfeld. Now, in terms of secret trials, I'm just going to talk a little bit about what they are and how they currently exist. I referred earlier to IRPA, the Immigrant and Refugee Protection Act, which is a very thick document. And if you were reading this document and you took out the term refugee and immigrant and left it blank, you would think that we were talking about plutonium or some other toxic substance. Because every reference to refugees and to immigrants is mixed in with terms like criminality, suspicion, public health threat, and risk. And the terms that are meant to deal with refugees are dealt with in terms that you would normally refer to garbage as removal, enforcement, things which are removal ready. Now, in the Immigrant and Refugee Protection Act, when someone has been accused of being a threat to the security of Canada, they are thrown behind bars and they are given what's known as a public summary of the evidence, which they will never be allowed to see, nor their lawyers are allowed to see. And I've got one of those public summaries right here. This is for the case of Mr. Mohammed Harkat, who was arrested on International Human Rights Day of 2002 and has been in jail ever since. And essentially, in this public summary of the evidence, all it says is this: the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, CSIS, believes the person known as Mohammed Harkat, herein referred to as Harkat, reportedly born on August 6, 1968. So right off the bat, the fact that we haven't even confirmed his birth date means that he is suspicious, because CSIS hasn't actually done the research. Reportedly born in Algeria and currently residing at is an inadmissible on security grounds pursuant to sections 341C and 341F of IRPA. That's the case against Mr. Harkat. The rest is secret. Now, in the Immigration Act, it says, on each request of the Minister of Immigration or the Solicitor General of Canada made at any time during the proceedings, the judge shall hear all or part of the information or evidence in the absence of the individual named on the certificate. That is a secret trial. And later on, it says the information or evidence which shall be heard shall not be included in the summary, but may be considered by the judge in deciding whether the certificate is reasonable. And then finally, and this is for those of you who are concerned about the rule of law, almost most distressing, the judge may receive into evidence anything that, in the opinion of the judge, is appropriate, even if it is inadmissible in a court of law, and the judge may base the decision on that evidence. So someone heard from someone who heard from someone that Mr. Harkat was hanging out at a certain donut shop with someone else, and that becomes evidence.
4, 5, and 6 degrees of separation. If you were in Afghanistan between 1989 and 1993, at the same time as Osama bin Laden was in Afghanistan, along with 25 million other individuals in that country, you are suspect because of the potential guilt by association. Now, the question that we have been dealing with time and time again is, well, why these men, why these individuals? And I think later on in the discussion we can talk about Islamophobia and the whole way in which the Muslim community has been demonized and vilified. But let's go back 10 years to the bombing of the Oklahoma City building by a white fanatic in the United States, Timothy McVeigh. And in the 3 days between the bombing and when Mr. McVeigh was picked up, there was some research done to look at credible news sources, such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, Newsweek magazine, and CNN. And when you look at those 3 days of solid investigative journalism that these guys were doing, here was their conclusion. Connie Chung from NBC News: U.S. government sources told CBS News that the bombing has Middle East terrorism written all over it. CBS Evening News, Steve Emerson says, Oklahoma City, I can tell you, is probably considered as one of the largest centers of Islamic radical activity outside of the Middle East. New York Times, some Middle Eastern groups have held meetings in Oklahoma City, and the city is home to at least 3 mosques. So based on this solid evidence, the United States had concluded before they picked up McVeigh that this was a Muslim conspiracy that was at the heart of the bombing, which, as we know, was committed by white people. Now, if you go through the headlines since September the 11th of 2001 and look at who is getting the coverage and who is not, some of you might have missed this story. 2 white people with a huge cyanide cache who were hoping to set it off in a huge blockbuster store killing hundreds and hundreds of civilians. They're described as right-wing extremists, but the United States has not put up an orange alert for right-wing extremists, nor has it been picking up people like Mr. Rumsfeld or Mr. Bush. Also, there was the case of a young man who flew a little airplane into a skyscraper in Atlanta, Georgia, just after September 11, 2001. But again, because of the fact that he was white, there wasn't a whole hoofera about young white teenage kids who were going to flying schools all across the South. And then you have people such as The Alternative. I don't know how many of you are Democrats abroad, and I apologize if this is insulting, but John Kerry attacks Bush over porous borders. Al-Qaeda members, terrorists, could cross from Canada. So the level of debate, even among people who believe that there is an alternative in the United States, has basically been reduced to, you know, whether you think the terrorists are going to come in from Canada or from Mexico. And the amazing role of the press in this is that Tom Ridge can come to Canada and hold a press conference with Anne McClellan and state very clearly, we know that every day we are turning terrorists away from the border, both in Mexico and Canada. He says, every day we're turning them away. Well, if they're turning them away and they're so concerned about terrorism, where are they going? Why aren't they picking them up? And when they do pick up individuals, you get the big scare headlines that say, we've caught another one, another Al-Qaeda link. And then about 6 months later, you find a little article like this that says, U.S. drops all charges against Army chaplain at Guantanamo Bay, who we thought was a terrorist threat because he was hanging out with the Muslims down at Guantanamo. FBI apologizes to man linked to Madrid blast. On and on it goes, and in fact, there was a study that was done in the U.S. to look at the number of individuals who were detained after September the 11th, largely Middle Eastern Muslim men, 5,000. Does anyone know how many convictions they've gotten on the terrorism charges at this point? 0. 0 out of 5,000. Now, I don't want to use a sports analogy, but I will. That's a really crappy batting average when you're talking about people's civil liberties and people's civil rights. So this comes back to why we're here tonight and some of the family members you're going to be hearing from, because we are talking about terrorism, and we're talking about the terrorism which is being inflicted upon families, upon individuals, and upon communities. Hassan Omri, a Syrian refugee from Egypt, sits tonight in solitary confinement, as he has for every night of the past 3 years and 1 month. 3 years without charge, without bail, on secret evidence which neither he nor his lawyer is allowed to see. That is cruelty. That is mental and physical torture. And I say physical torture because until last year, when Hassan went on a 40-day hunger strike within days of his life, he went on that hunger strike because for the first 2 winters in solitary confinement, he was freezing. They would not turn on the heat in his cell. That too is cruelty, and I would say torture. And so we have individuals who are being held indefinitely. And as the International Red Cross has said, you have to charge someone. You have to give them a sense of why they're being detained, how long they're being detained, because part of that is a very psychological process. And if you don't know when you're getting out, if you don't think you'll ever get out, that too is a form of mental cruelty and torture. And so tonight, we're gathered here, and you're going to be hearing from the families, talking about their experiences. And as you listen to them, I invite you to consider the fact that it is not just these individuals and their cases to be considered, because this is just the tip of the iceberg. Later this spring, Parliament will reintroduce, yet again, a Citizenship Act. And in the Citizenship Act, it will give the immigration minister the power to strip anyone in this country of their naturalized Canadian citizenship using secret evidence. And on the basis of that, they can be deported. How can they do such a thing? Well, they can do such a thing because they've been doing such things for the past 15 years in this country using the security certificate. Because the ultimate result of the security certificate is that you will be deported to a country where you face torture or worse. And we know, as Amnesty International has pointed out, in all the cases of the Secret Trial 5, all are at risk of torture, long-term detention, if not execution, if they're sent back to Egypt, Algeria, Morocco, and Syria. Even the Canadian government, in its own assessments of these cases, has said these individuals are at risk of torture. And even if we conclude that they are at risk of torture, we still think they should be sent back. Canada is operating, if not in the gray areas, in contravention of international law. The Convention Against Torture states very clearly you do not send anyone out of your country if they can expect to be tortured. And so I'm going to shut up here and let Ahmed and Mona speak, but I just want to share with you a letter that some of you will probably hopefully be seeing in the Globe and Mail in the coming weeks. This is a letter from Adil Sharkawi. Mr. Sharkawi is the father of two. His first child was born and he was thrown into detention. His second child he was not around for the birth of, and he has never been allowed to touch or hold his second child. And Adil is a fan of French literature, and he's a fan of Emile Zola. And he has written something called J'accuse, in the same way that Zola wrote J'accuse around the Dreyfus affair in France. And he says, and I'll just read part of this, "To the proposal of the Honorable Judge S. Noel that I should declare that I am not guilty in exchange for unconditional liberty, I respond as follows. For 17 months, I have shouted to the four winds, to all who would hear, that I am innocent of all the charges made by CSIS, that I have never been and that I am not a member of Al-Qaeda, and that I reject all forms of terrorism, including state terrorism. And for the gazillionth time, I challenge CSIS to provide evidence to corroborate its allegations in the context of a just and fair trial according to the rules of international and Canadian law. I demand neither liberty nor protection, but simply to be judged according to the same legal standards that apply to the worst of pedophiles and serial killers. I demand to be presumed innocent. I demand the constitutional right to see the so-called secret evidence. I demand the constitutional right to cross-examine alleged informants, and I demand the right to appeal. When a security certificate is upheld, there is no appeal. And I denounce secret trials. I denounce racial profiling, because hundreds of times in this country, CSIS and the RCMP are showing up on the doorsteps of Muslims and Arabs and questioning them into the late hours of the night, asking them to spy on their communities and saying, if you do not cooperate with us, we will lower the boom. And you saw what happened to Jabal and Majoub, and maybe that will happen to you as well. I denounce ex parte and in-camera sessions, the secret sessions which take place on an ongoing basis. I denounce the drift towards the arbitrary. I denounce the instrumentalization of fear, and I denounce the blurring of the political and the juridical. Finally, I accuse CSIS of targeting Arab and Muslim communities by means of harassment and intimidation, of subcontracting torture to countries like Syria and Jordan, such as the torture by rendition in the Arar affair. And I accuse the ministers of having signed a certificate against me, depriving me of all my civil rights before CSIS's allegations have been proven in an independent court. I accuse the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of having obtained on CSIS's behalf diplomatic assurances in order to facilitate my deportation to what Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration Canada, Amnesty and Human Rights Watch have described as a serious risk of death, torture, cruel, and unusual punishment. Those are the words of a man who has been in jail now almost 2 years on secret evidence. You'll be hearing more tonight from the members of the families who themselves are also in confinement, who themselves cannot touch and hug and hold their loved ones, and who are simply asking, as the five men have asked time and time again, if you have something on us, charge us. Bring forward the evidence, and we are more than happy to answer that in court. And if you can't do that the same way that you do to mass murderers and pedophiles, let us go and let's end this whole charade. Thank you.